Hello and welcome to the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Doc Jones, prolific private investor seen on Twitter and CEO.ca, but also just an activist investor in the space. And Doc Jones, it's always great getting you on the show for an update just to see what's on your radar. We were talking off mic just about some of the recent M&A action in Guyana. You had Mako Mining first make a move on Gold Source Mines there to augment their development and production profile. And then just recently, we saw G Mining make a move on Reunion Gold in Guyana to also augment their production profile and development profile. So we've seen two big moves in Guyana, and we've had on the show Omai Gold Mines. I know that's a position in your portfolio, and you actually connected us with Elaine, so appreciate that. But when you look at Omai, they seem like the next company standing to possibly be taken out, as this area has really gotten a lot of M&A attention recently. Maybe walk us through the value drivers and what you see with Omai Gold Mines.
Oh, hey, Shad. Thanks for having me back. Yeah, it is very interesting because if you look at the metrics at which those acquisitions or those proposed mergers are taking place, with Gold Source, it's a smaller resource. It's under 2 million ounces, probably in production around 90,000 ounces a year. And the acquirer is paying about $37 an ounce. And then Reunion on the other end of the scale, which is about 5.5 million ounces, open pit with a smaller underground component in there, they're paying about $120 an ounce. And then we go to Omai, which is in the same jurisdiction, a brownfield site that has infrastructure, tailings from the previous operator that they can use. They have the old open pit for the Guild Creek, which can be used for tailings as well. And they're being valued at $11 an ounce for their 4.3 million ounces. And these are high quality ounces. It comes in approximately close to the same grade as Reunion as far as the open pit. And the underground is actually at a higher grade and a lot shallower. The difference being is where Omai's open pit at this point is 2.4 million ounces, where Reunion, I believe, is about 5 million ounces. But their pit goes down to 640 meters, whereas Omai's is 87% of those ounces are above 350 meters and more of a flat line kind of pancake mineralization, which in development is a lot cheaper because you can have a wider pit and therefore your mining rate doesn't decrease as drastically in a, like you would experience in a deposit that cones more severely. So it's interesting. They put out a PEA and you know, it's very interesting to see how the market digests things and whether or not it misses the significance or the implication of the news that has come out. For Omai, their PEA was done just on the open pit and only on 2/3 of the resource. It's a starter PEA. And the reason they did that is because there's some zones within the pit shell that need more drilling to include it in the resource. So there are areas that are well mineralized that are in this PEA as waste rock, as well as they have 500,000 ounces to the east end of the pit that there's not enough drill density to connect it to the pit that would increase their strip ratio on paper. So they didn't include that. And those 500,000 ounces are at 2 grams per ton, which is very economic. So currently they came out, they put out their PEA, the CapEx came in lower than expected at just under $400 million because they have a lot of infrastructure there in place already that they can use in a production scenario. And as is, just doing a partial PEA basically on part of the resource, they came in with an NPV using 1950 gold of $560 million, which is, you know, almost 2-to-1 NPV. But the real thing is it's going to change because with this gold price, the Guild Creek deposit, which is about 1.8 million ounces underground that was excluded, that begins 300 meters below surface, that's at 3.5 grams about. And the thing is, it's a big blob. It's perfect for underground block mining because it's pretty homogeneous. You have this zones that are almost 100 meters wide. So the opportunity there is they're going to drill those zones and connect the zones in the open pit, bringing all the resource into the next economic study, which will probably be in, you know, 8 months to a year from now, and then also include the Guild Creek deposit. So then you have something that looks like about a pushing 5 million ounces that is trading at a fraction of what other companies are being acquired for in the jurisdiction. So what's the right number? It's somewhere between 37 and 120, I think. And right now we're way below that at 11. So there's a great downside protection, in my opinion, because you have this strong resource, strong team in a jurisdiction that has become a destination for capital for acquisitions, as well, in particular with Omai. If you look in the news, and this was only in the Ghana newspapers, is that there's an article of the president of the country with his arm around the CEO, Elaine, saying in quotes that he wants this mine and when will it be open? Like when you have that kind of support from the government, coupled with the underlying fundamentals of this company, that they will make a very healthy margin, especially at 2000 plus gold. It's kind of a no-brainer for me. It's more or less a be patient and wait. Because I've removed a lot of my downside risk entering the stock at this low level, well below the nearest comp that was acquired. So that's how I'm kind of looking at that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. And it not just the ability for their ounces in the ground to get re-rated up closer to where some of the peer valuations are, but just the exploration upside. She also talked to us about some of their other targets like Snake Pond and Blueberry Hill that could also augment the resources and continue to grow things there. So an exciting story to follow along with in Guyana. Like you say, it's been a destination for capital lately. So we'll keep our eyes on Omai Gold Mines. Let's pivot over to another metal, though, nickel. I know that you're a fan of Magna Mining. We've had Jason on the show and Paul on the show a couple times, even just recently. And they've had a string of good news, and they've been delivering and executing on their milestones, which I always find impressive because so few companies do it. Maybe walk us through an update on Magna Mining.
Oh, yeah. These guys have done a fantastic job. This is one position that I certainly don't lose any sleep over. They acquired Crane Hill about 18 months ago. And since then, they've put a resource on it, drilled about 25,000 meters that will go into the next resource update, executed an ore selling agreement with Vale, as well as got the permit for Crane Hill to take water, which essentially means that they can dewater the underground from the old mine there and start driving the ramp for development. So they're going to start doing test mining very soon. They have the capital to do that, where they have an agreement in place to take 400,000 tons and sell that to Vale in their selling agreement, and then likely transition right into the steady state mining, ramping up to around 1,500 to 2,000 tons a day. And what they intend on doing is initially for the first 5, 6, 7 years is just to do the selective mining and mining a grade that would be equivalent to about 3% nickel or better. And the resource there, if people don't remember, is Crane Hill is about 32 million tons divided between open pit and underground. The open pit is about 16 million tons at 1.1, 1.2% nickel equivalent, and the underground is 2.2% nickel equivalent. But that resource is based on the prior operator's drilling. Since then, they've been doing a lot of drilling, and they have proved empirically that there are multiple zones that are modeled as waste rock that are highly mineralized and high grade, as well as within the historic resource, where there was some sparse drilling in the 101 and the 109 zone in particular, that was modeled as just like a low sulfidation PGM zone. What they've vectored in on is there's a high grade core in there of massive sulfide, and they're pulling out these incredible grades out of there, where they have like 30 meters of, call it 4 or 5% nickel equivalent, 6 meters of 9% nickel equivalent. And you know, these numbers sound great, but just to break it down a little further for people, the way that I look at this is using a 850 nickel equivalent per pound price. So at 3% nickel equivalent, you have an in situ of about 560 a ton. Then you back out your recoveries, you end up with about 390 a ton. You back out your milling, mining, tolling, transportation, you're left with a mine margin of about $200 a ton. Now, if you take your $200 a ton and you times that by, they get to a steady state of in the middle there of 1,750 tons a day, 1,750 tons a day times 365 times $203 US per ton, you get a mine margin or EBITDA of about 130 million US. That's the target 2 to 3 years out from here. But in the meantime, they will be generating revenue as well. And you're talking about a company that has a market cap of 90 million US. Of course, there's going to be some CapEx to get into production, full steady state production, but that's pretty small. It's it's probably in the range of 50 to 70 million. And through my conversations with the company, it sounds like they're leaning towards a plan that is non-dilutive, either some sort of credit line backed by the cash flow from the mining, or it could be a stream on one of the minor minerals in there, maybe a gold stream or a cobalt stream, something like that, because people don't realize that there's a cobalt in this deposit. It's not really talked about. There's enough there where they could do some kind of stream and have the capital they need to go into production, start generating cash flow. So you look at this company within that resource, they're probably going to be able to delineate 7 to 8 million tons that fits the criteria that I just talked about. And when you do the math on doing 1750 tons a day, you're looking at 650,000 tons a year. So that's like a decade where they'll be able to generate these kind of margins at a 850 nickel. Myself, I don't think 850 nickel is going to last much longer because it's below the break-even cost of the producers in Indonesia. So I could see nickel prices escalating up over the next 2 years to around $10 to $12 per pound. In that scenario, they're going to make so much money. So I just think it's a great story, and it's still very much not well understood, but it's starting to get more traction. I know they've been invited to the Rural Symposium to present there, so that's positive. That'll give more eyes on the story. But in the end, regardless, once they start mining and generating cash flow, I believe we'll shift to a multiple that reflects an EBITDA multiple of 5 to 10x EBITDA. So on that basis, my thesis is within 2 to 3 years, I will see a 4 to 8x return. And that's great for me, because they're going to be banking all that cash too after 4 years. What are they going to do? They're debt free. They've got $400 or $500 million in the bank. Do they build Shakespeare and then ramp up to 4,500 tons a day? And then Shakespeare is permitted to be expanded to up to 6,700 tons a day. So there's a lot of growth in front of them. And they've also been talking about possibly making another acquisition. So they may end up with another asset that's dropped down from a major, which you're looking at another FNX, right? Which was a beautiful outcome for everyone back in the day, from 50 cents to like $20 in 8 years with Terry McGibbon. So yeah, it's one of the best teams in the sector. Like I couldn't be more happy with their execution. And I think part of that is they're also large shareholders, which really means a lot. I think the CEO's, the majority of his net worth is in stock in the company. He owns about 10%, and he's been very vocal. And I got to take my hat off to him that he's gone out there and publicly stated numerous times, I will not sell a share until this company is worth at least $1 billion, which is, 10X from here. So yeah, that's a bold statement, but it looks like there is a pathway to do that, but it will take, 2 to 4 years probably to get there, but it's well worth waiting for on my end.
Yeah, it's quite a bold statement from Jason, but I like seeing management aligned with shareholders, and they've done it before in FNX. So as we were kind of quipping offline, it's really FNX 2.0 here, and they've mentioned the same thing in many interviews where we've had them on the show, that they're just using the same playbook that's already worked. And you can see that staged approach to growth where they get the phase one production going first, and then eventually could build Shakespeare, or as you say, even augment it with another project acquisition. So we'll definitely keep following along with Magna Mining. But let's talk about, we've covered gold, we've covered nickel and PGMs. Let's round out the metals here, Doc Jones, by covering copper, zinc, and lead and silver over at Emerita Resources. I know this is a company you've been following for a while, ticker EMO, but what is the latest update out of Emerita?
Yeah, this is a somewhat controversial name because they have that outstanding court case that's coming in now 10 months and 1 week for the Aznacolor property, which is just an amazing asset for whoever ends up owning it. I personally think Emerita will, but the courts will decide approximately in 10 months. There's a lot of information out there on that. People feel free to look in, about the public releases and make their own determination. This is about their other property that they own 100%, the IBW property. And the thing is, I always recommend that people, if you invest in a company that is mining or has operations in another country in a foreign language, like for example, in Spain, it's in Spanish. that you use Google, you set it to that region and you set it in that language, because that's how you can find out a lot of information that is not disseminated widely. Like in Huelva, in a newspaper there on the 16th of April, I came across this article where it says they're talking about the Emerita hosted government officials from both parties to the IBW project. And it says here, it is currently pending all licenses and authorizations by the administrations whose representatives have indicated that they will speed up all procedures for the deposit to enter exploitation phase in the near future. It is planned that the new project, which aims to deliver wealth for the area, will generate about 1,500 jobs directly and indirectly. So what's important about that is that you have the government itself, both parties, publicly endorsing and saying that they will expedite the exploitation of the IBW. The exploitation is the thing, you get the exploitation permit to build a mine, to advance and go into full development, basically, because they put out a 43-101 earlier in the year. They've got about 20 million tons, a little over 8% zinc equivalent, and have been drilling since then, and that's going to get bigger. So I think that that's very interesting that the government would, both sides would publicly come out and say, yeah, we want this mine. We are in support of getting it fast-tracked, because usually an exploitation permit takes about 18 months to, you know, it's been said a year to 2 years, but probably about 18 months. But with being fast-tracked here, that means this exploitation permit may come in under a year. And they filed for it a few months ago, so we may see this permit by year end. It's a real value driver, because once you have an exploitation permit, you have a 30-year term on that property to mine, as well as then you can renew it for, I think it's another 20 or 40 years, something like that. But it certainly increases the value of that property for an acquirer, because they've de-risked it. They've gone through all the stages to get it to a place where you can build a mine. So that was a big event that often these events get overshadowed by the Oz and the Collier case, because that's such a big, that will be a big rewrite, a huge one if and when they win. But the IBW itself is driving a lot of value. And I look at it, you know, today at a $90 million market cap, I believe, based on how I've worked out the numbers and looked at the potential NPV, that just IBW itself is worth multiples of the current share price. And then you have this cherry on top of Asna Collier when that gets resolved. So that's really interesting. They came out with some preliminary metallurgy, but it's incomplete. They released just the initials on the base metals is zinc concentrate, which they were able to produce a high grade sellable zinc concentrate that's a higher concentrate than the average, but you get the higher concentration at the expense of recoveries. So the recoveries, I believe, were in the mid-high 80s. So I think what they're going to do, because they hired a metallurgist in-house now, is to bring the con down 5-10% to be in line with all the other cons, and then that should also bring up the recoveries as well. And they're also working on the precious metals recoveries. They haven't released any data on that yet, because unlike most of the deposits in that area, Romanera itself has a considerable amount of gold. Between the Romanera and Alcura, there's about 800,000 ounces of gold, close to 2 grams per ton. So they're doing some work on that, because historically, other deposits, it was, you know, 0.3 or 0.4% gold. So there wasn't really a lot of work done to recover it, because at the time, too, when gold was, you know, $500 an ounce, $400 an ounce, it doesn't make sense to run a flotation circuit or whatnot to try to recover what is, you know, $15 worth of metal. But at 2 grams and $2,400 gold, that's a considerable amount of money there. So yeah, that's basically what's going on with them there. And for me, it's kind of like a double header, where I've got IBW and their data room has been open, and I've been hearing rumors about various companies going in and out of the data room, potentially looking at IBW. And then we have the Asna Collier, which is coming to its resolution within the next year. So yeah, it's very interesting for sure.
Thanks, Doc Jones, for that update on Emerita. Yeah, they got a nice project already undervalued at IBW. And like you say, even gold with the Romanera portion of that. And then the Asna Collier Kickner, if they win the legal dispute or if things go their way, as just another icing on the cake kind of situation that could really augment the company's growth. but a lot on the go with Emerita. And so not just copper, zinc, lead, and silver, but also gold. We'll throw that in there too. So I think we've hit every metal here, Doc Jones, in this interview. We've talked about Omai, we've talked about Magna, we talked about Emerita. Always appreciate you coming on the show and just sharing what you're looking at in your investments, and looking forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Chad. You know, I know I'm talking my book because I own all these companies, so everyone should, you know, do their own due diligence. But I think one takeaway people can take from this, regardless if they like the investments I've made or whatnot, is how to do research on a level that most people won't. Like using Google and searching the country of destination in the language that is spoken there. Like, for example, this stuff about Omai or Emerita, you wouldn't know unless you did that. And that gives you a certain advantage, because when you're investing, your competition is other investors. So your knowledge is your power, you know, to either get in before everyone else or get out before everyone else, depending on whether the news is good or bad. So that's another tool people can put in their toolbox, and hopefully that helps them have better outcomes in the future.
Well, appreciate you sharing that, Doc Jones. And yes, some of this is just learning how to invest, learning how to do due diligence, and appreciate you sharing some of the tips and tricks of the trade and what you look at when you're investing in these companies. Keep us posted as more companies come on your radar, and we'll get you back on the show for an update, and have a great rest of the week.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.